To reach Bebbanburg, you must take the causeway to the south, a low strip of rock and sand that is guarded by a great wooden tower, the Low Gate, which is built on top of an earthen wall. We thundered through the tower's arch, our horses white with sweat, and rode past the granaries, the smithy, the mews and the stables, all wooden buildings well thatched with rye straw, and so up the inner path to the high gate, which protected the peak of the rock that was surrounded by a wooden rampart encircling my father's hall. There we dismounted, letting slaves take our horses and hawks, and ran to the eastern rampart from where we gazed out to sea. The three ships were now close to the islands where the puffins live and the seal folk dance in winter. We watched them, and my stepmother, alarmed by the sound of hooves, came from the hall to join us on the rampart.
"The devil has opened his bowels," my father greeted her.
"God and his saints preserve us," Guther said, crossing herself. I had never known my real mother, who had been my father's second wife, and like his first, had died in childbirth. So both my brother and I, who were really half-brothers, had no mother. But I thought of Guther as my mother, and on the whole she was kind to me. Kinder indeed than my father, who did not much like children. Guther wanted me to be a priest, saying that my elder brother would inherit the land and become a warrior to protect it, so I must find another life path. She had given my father two sons and a daughter, but none had lived beyond a year. The three ships were coming closer now. It seemed they had come to inspect Bebbanburg, which did not worry us, for the fortress was reckoned impregnable, and so the Danes could stare all they wanted. The nearest ship had twin banks of 12 oars each, and as the ship coasted 100 paces offshore, a man leaped from the ship's side and ran down the nearer bank of oars, stepping from one shaft to the next like a dancer, and he did it wearing a mail shirt and holding a sword. We all prayed he would fall, but of course he did not. He had long fair hair, very long, and when he had pranced the full length of the oar bank, he turned and ran the shafts again. "She was trading at the mouth of the Tyne a week ago," Aelfric, my father's brother, said.
"You know that?"
"I saw her," Aelfric said. "I recognize that prow. See how there's a light-colored strake on the bend," he spat. "She didn't have a dragon's head then."
"They take the beast heads off when they trade," my father said. "What were they buying?"
"Exchanging pelts for salt and dried fish. Said they were merchants from Hytherbu."
"The merchants looking for a fight now," my father said. "And the Danes on the three ships were indeed challenging us by clashing their spears and swords against their painted shields. But there was little they could do against Bebbanburg, and nothing we could do to hurt them, though my father ordered his wolf banner raised. The flag showed a snarling wolf's head, and it was his standard in battle. But there was no wind, and so the banner hung limp, and its defiance was lost on the pagans, who, after a while, became bored with taunting us, settled to their thwarts and rode off to the south.
"We must pray," my stepmother said. Guther was much younger than my father. She was a small, plump woman with a mass of fair hair and a great reverence for St. Cuthbert, whom she worshipped because he had worked miracles. In the church beside the hall, she kept an ivory comb that was said to have been Cuthbert's beard comb, and perhaps it was.
"We must act," my father snarled.
He turned away from the battlements.
"You," he said to my elder brother Uhtred, "take a dozen men, ride south. Watch the pagans, but nothing more, you understand? If they land their ships on my ground, I want to know where."
"Yes, father."
"But don't fight them," my father ordered. "Just watch the bastards, and be back here by nightfall.